Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks. Really skinny.
Oh, like a good skinny or a bad skinny? I did just get a haircut. Maybe that's it.
Skinny, like skinny where I'm jealous of you.
Ooh.
But I was just on vacation and I hate myself after I come back from vacation.
Why is that?
Can we talk about body dysmorphia at the top of the hour?
No better way to start off a Tuesday afternoon than talking about body dysmorphia.
Yeah, let's just get into it. So number one, I love a vacation, as you know.
Oh, good. Yeah.
I love a trip. I love a girls' trip, especially. I was just in New Orleans. Great news. Did not get sucked out of the sky.
I was going to say, you seem delightfully unsucked. Congratulations.
Which is shocking. I was just in New Orleans. One would think that's the place to get
sucked.
One
way or another. If you are an American person looking to get sucked between the ages of, I don't know, 18 to 65,
80.
New Orleans, 18 to 80. I think New Orleans would make top 5 to 10 lists of places where you can get sucked.
I saw some activity on the streets where I was like, is this a paid transaction? Anyway, let me just organize my thoughts. I came back from vacation and I made the grave mistake last night at 2 a.m. after I came back from the airport before I went into the shower. I weighed myself. Now, you famously do not weigh yourself, even though you are a skinny mini.
I have not weighed myself, I don't think, in at least over a year. The last time that I weighed myself was I was at a client's office and they had a weighing machine and I was like, oh, let me weigh myself.
A weighing machine? You mean a scale?
Yes. And I weighed myself. But regularly I don't weigh myself. It's depressing. Why would you do that? I get no information. I do nothing with that information.
It really is one of my most toxic traits is that I weigh myself every single day. It is one of the very last bits of my eating disorder that I am trying to get away from, and it's like the hardest thing to break because I've told my brain that if you don't weigh yourself then you will become fat, which is not true. Whether or not you weigh yourself, your body still changes however it wants.
Exactly. And I got out of it because I used to do that. I used to weigh myself every single morning like a crazy person. This is like the first time I tried to go on a diet. I wanted to see, I needed that validation every single day. And you get a kick out of it when you were like, oh my God, I lost 0.7 pounds last night. And then you get depressed when you're like, how did I put on weight? And it's just, it's all so stupid.
It is. Like we walked 20,000 steps every single day when we were in New Orleans. And the last day we did a hot power yoga class the last day that we were there. So like my body has probably done the most exercise it's done in, I don't know, months.
Yeah.
So like, and I can literally feel my muscles like all over my body activated right now. Mm-hmm. So like in my mind, I have all of the things that I know are true, right? Like it's true. Like you ate a lot of salt. You walked around. You probably didn't drink enough water. Like there's every single reason to know that the number on the scale is not a real number.
Yeah.
But my brain is so fucked up.
That's the reason why. Never weigh yourself. Throw out that weighing machine.
I should get rid of my weighing machine, shouldn't I?
You should. It's silly.
It's I won't get rid of it. I think I will just tuck it away somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, what do you need to weigh yourself for? Right. I guess maybe the kids, and make sure the kids,
my kids never, my kids don't, they don't, my kids have no concept of weight, which is great. That's what I want for them. I want them to, I should call my therapist. Do you want to know the very first time I weighed myself in my life?
When?
You were present. We were moving from Saudi Arabia and we were packing and stuff. And it was the first time I had like even seen a scale because I was like, okay, like whatever, it's a scale. And I stepped on it and I was 50 kg or 100 pounds.
Yeah.
I was like 9 or 10 years old. And I remember everybody being like, oh my God, you're 100 pounds? And that was my very first memory of, oh, you're a big person. Like you're a number on it. Like the scale is telling you that you're gross. And then the next time I weighed myself was, or weight came into the picture, was when we moved to America. One of our family friends had like a play, you know, like a playground set in the back, like a whatever, like a play structure, swing set.
Yeah.
And one of the things it said, like there's a weight limit, and it said the weight limit was 125 pounds.
Yeah.
And I was like, in my head, I was like, well, I know I've grown since I moved here.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I'm 125 pounds.
Yeah.
And everybody just sort of like looked at me like, and I don't think they even did. I think that I imagined it because I thought that everybody was thinking about how I'm a big fat oaf. And so that was like my next thought about weight. It was like, oh, well, you're a big person because a bunch of adults told you that that's not the right number that you should be. And then on top of that, now you're in a setting with children where you might make – you might ruin fun for a child because you might break their swing set because of how fat you are.
Yeah. And that's so, I mean, you know, in terms of how damaging that could be.
Yeah.
That you're like, you as a child, you are taking away, I guess, innocence or whatever, the essence of being a child, which is just not being able to have fun. You know, what's interesting?
Yeah.
You said this, you know, and I'm trying to think of the first time that I, like the first connection I have with my weight. And, you know, growing up, I think around 8 or 9 is when I started to kind of show as a big bodied person.
Yeah.
So I always knew, but mine is also connected to playing, playing with a toy. So 1993, when we visited America, one of our relatives had one of those cars.
Motorized cars.
And the weight limit on that bad boy was, I think, 90 pounds.
Yeah.
And I think I was at 10, I was like 110, right? Yeah. But we also had other cousins there that were like kind of roughly the same size as me, but I think it was always close. And I remember getting into the car and like driving it, and I heard like the car struggle.
Oh no.
The car went "Err," and I was like but it still went, and I could still do it, right? But I knew then, I was like, oh man, there are some toys I cannot play with because I weigh too much. And then I didn't weigh myself for a while, so I knew in like 93 I was like 110 or whatever. And then after we moved here in 7th grade or maybe starting 8th grade, right?
Yeah.
I went to the doctor. And so I must have been 12 or 13. And at that point, I was over 200 pounds.
Right? Wow.
And that's the crazy thing is, like, I went within like a span of 3 years, I gained 100 pounds and I had no memory of it. Like, I had no memory of being like, I was like, when the fuck was I 140? When did that happen? Nobody told me. I'm hitting 200 already. Right. And then, you know, for me, I think the line, the number that I cared a lot about was 200.
Yeah.
Because I always expected for a while, I just expected myself to always weigh more than 200 pounds. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I was whatever I was. And then I remember getting below 200 and being like, oh my God, I can't believe that this happened. So
yeah,
all of that thinking, all of like that, like agonizing over it, and you know, even while you're going through like a diet or you're going through like a nutrition plan or whatever, I remember just worrying about the number is the worst thing. And it's just, why do that?
So. You know what? I think right after this ends, I'm going to take my scale and put it underneath my sink.
I think you should have a cathartic moment and destroy it.
We need it when we weigh suitcases when we go on trips.
I was going to say, that's really the only,
And my stupid husband's the one that gets on a scale every single time. And then he makes me do the math. He's like, what's 175 plus, you know, or minus like 140? I'm like, you weigh 140 pounds?
He weighs 140?
I don't think so. Let me not put him on blast like right now. That's my goal weight. I was 140 pounds when I got married. Isn't that weird? Yeah. Because you would think that, like, my whole life I thought 140 pounds was a fat person. But actually, yeah. 140 pounds, especially for a woman, is a perfectly normal weight. But the BMI tells you that that's on the brink of obesity. So
I don't know. I hear 140 pound woman and I immediately throw up.
Anyway, that's so but my trip was great. And it's so weird because – I realized how fucked up my brain is because, in my mind, I have always been I've always believed that I'm the biggest person in the room.
Yeah.
I'm the biggest girl in the room. Even when I was at my skinniest, I feel like when I had like a massive eating disorder and I was working out twice a day and like taking laxatives and like not eating, I was like the smallest I'd ever been. And even then I used to think to myself, like, you could still be smaller. You're not the skinniest person in the room. And so, like, now that, like, all my friends were, like, all adult women in our, like, late 30s, early 40s, everybody's had kids. Everybody's got, like, different types of bodies. And they're very celebratory of each other's. Like, we're very celebratory of each other's bodies. I still think to myself, like, I look like the biggest girl there. Even when I look at the pictures and I think to myself, like, we all look good. We all look generally good. Like, one of my friends is a, like, CrossFitter. So she is a very, very fit person and she's, like, muscular. Yeah. But, like, the rest of us are just, like, generally sort of the same. Like, we went to this yoga class and, like, nobody's ability was better or less than the other. Yeah. And it should have been a moment of, like, empowerment. But a lot of my brain in those situations is still eating up with the thought of, like, the pictures are going to look really bad or you're going to look stupid or, like, does this outfit look fine or people are going to look at the roles and, like, all these things. And, like, literally nobody is, especially not my friends. Especially not my friends. And the thing is, like, sometimes I think to myself, like, I think that what's interesting is that when I look at people – who have bigger bodies than mine and I see them dressing a certain way and I see them like embracing their bodies and dressing as however the fuck they want, I'm like, that's so beautiful. Like, I think they look so good. But I never, ever, ever think that somebody's going to look at my body and think that. I always think that somebody's going to look at my body and be like, she should probably put a burqa on.
I think that, but just the face cover. That's what I don't want to see. The rest of you is fine. Yeah, man, it's a real motherfucker. So, like, I have obviously I've changed my lifestyle drastically. I want to say in the last 3 or 4 years. Yeah. Right? Part of that lifestyle, a lot of it is wearing a
skin tight shirt. What you got there? Look at your arms.
Sweater.
No, why do your arms look so muscular? You look like fucking Jake Gyllenhaal over here. What's going on here?
Stop it. I started. Are you hitting on me?
No, I'm upset. I'm mad.
I started working out. It doesn't
bring me joy that you're in better shape than I am, okay?
I'm sorry.
Turn off your camera.
I did.
You could turn it back on. It's fine.
Thank you. No, so I started working out and I started going to the gym and I started losing weight, right? And in my head, I was like, well, the way that I'm going to capture all of this, the way that I'm going to kind of measure myself is just to go by my dress sizes, my shirt sizes and stuff like that, right? So I hit from like XL to large. I remember hitting large and be like, oh my God, the possibilities. Oh, the shirts. The shirts I'm going to be able to wear in large, right? And then I hit medium almost immediately. Like, this is all within a year. right? Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, okay, so I'm just going to lose weight. I'm just going to be a person that loses weight. And in like 6 months from now, I'm going to be my perfect weight. Uh-huh. I'm going to be able to get all the clothes that I want or whatever. And what I realized is that, you know, it wasn't, it never, for me, it's just something that just, I need to constantly just keep doing. That's what the gym is for me now. And you have to, for me, I found it like, I found another reason to go to the gym.
Yeah.
Rather than just the physical, because if you think about it that way, the process is too slow. Yeah. For you to just stay with it, right? Yeah, otherwise, sure. You work your ass off. And yeah. At the end of the day, you feel good. You feel really good about the work that you do. And then if you're not thinking about it the right way, and you still have weight that you want to lose, you look at yourself in the mirror and you're like, why the fuck did I just work out? I did all this work.
Yeah.
And I still don't like the way that I look.
Yeah.
Right. So you have to find something else for yourself.
Yeah.
And that's just the way that I've been able to do it. And then just kind of not think about, you know, anything else, and try to find confidence, man. That's the deal. And even with all that, there are days when you just feel like the biggest piece of shit in the world and you just can't do anything about it.
Just like the largest oaf in the planet.
Yeah.
And with me, it's like the days where I feel like I'm a big fat oaf, mm-hmm. is also the days where I'm just like, and you have the ugliest face in the world. Yeah. You have dumb hair. And you know what? You're probably going to get fired from your job.
You deserve to get fired with that face.
And your kids don't love you. It's just like all of the things get compiled into one. And your friends are talking about you. You think you had a nice time in New Orleans? They're talking about you right now. They made a separate
group chat. There's a separate WhatsApp group chat about this trip, about all the awful things that you did. And not only that, they have pictures of you. They have pictures of you and your roles that they took in private. And they're sharing them with your kids right now, and your kids are commenting on it. Another beignet, mama.
Oh my god! So I'm not a donut girl. Let's talk about New Orleans. Now that I've trashed myself, let me talk about all the food that I ate. I'm not a donut girl, and I'm not a seafood girl, and those are two things that New Orleans is very well known for. Is you got a lot of seafood and you got the beignets. Let me tell you something. 10 out of 10. The food in New Orleans is so good. So I was like, how good could these donuts from Cafe Du Monde be that the line is this long? Buddy, let me tell you. I don't like donuts. Like I'm not like even these specialty donut places. I'm like, meh, it's fine, whatever.
Yeah.
It's like, they do something in New Orleans where they fry foods, but they don't taste heavy at all. Ooh. Which is really weird. Like, we ordered a shrimp po' boy and, like, a crawfish po' boy.
Mm-hmm.
And po' boy has, like, you know, it's a big, like, crusty piece of bread. And, like, there's mayo and, like, the fried shrimp on it. But somehow it is also the lightest sandwich I have ever eaten in my life.
Really?
It's refreshing, even. I don't understand. Ugh, it's so good. The food is great. The vibes were popping in New Orleans.
Yeah.
Great time.
You'd go again?
Yeah, I would go again. And I would eat all of the same food. Some of the food was so good that the day of our flight, we returned last night. Our flight, we had to leave for the airport at 6 o'clock. We made a reservation at this restaurant at 5 p.m. right when it opened so we could go back there and eat their desserts. Let me tell you about one of the desserts. You're going to lose your mind.
Ooh.
It was a salty, malty pretzel ice cream pie.
Salty, malty
pretzel ice cream pie. So we had ice cream, like a pretzel flavored, toffee flavored ice cream.
Okay.
Toffee bitch.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, then you had a crust.
You're a toffee. Yeah.
You had a crust of pretzels and toffee with little bits of chocolate in there. And then it was like salty and caramelly and cold, but also warm. It was I'm drooling right now. And then they had a bread pudding that was absurd. It was like a white chocolate bread pudding. And it was amazing.
Now, as you're describing this dessert, here's my issue with it. I already feel both the toffee and the pretzel pieces getting stuck in my teeth.
You know me. I don't like anything stuck in my teeth. No. Not didn't happen. Perfectly small enough where you get the crunch, but not so, but like enough bite that you still get the flavor of like the.
You get it all the way through.
Yeah, but okay. It doesn't get stuck in your teeth. It was amazing. Nice. It was great. Go. We also went on a ghost tour.
Oh.
There's a lot of murders that happen in New Orleans, it turns out. And there's a lot of like the tour that we went on was really cool. They really emphasized a lot that like a lot of the like the way that like voodoo and witchcraft and all these things are spoken about, they're spoken about because they're all viewed as indigenous and black and brown like traditions. Mm-hmm. And that is just how they've been packaged over the years by the colonizers, by white people, is like these are not things that are supposed to actually like curse you or hurt you. It's actually these are practices that are that focus on like healing and tapping into Mother Nature and looking at like energy and the people around you. It's not anything to do with like, you know, cursing anyone, but because mm-hmm. it is in, you know, they're more based in black and brown culture, white people are like, obviously.
Must be a curse.
Yeah. Set that bitch on fire. Let's go, lady. It's like the way, like, you know, smart women and probably lesbians were called witches in like Salem, Massachusetts. Like they were just women. They were just like women with opinions. And they were like,
You're a witch.
You're a witch.
On this ghost tour, uh-huh. What do you do on a ghost tour? Do you go hunting for ghosts?
You go hunting for ghosts? No, you just go to different places. There's a guy who walks and tells you stories about ghosts and murders and voodoo and stuff like that in New Orleans and like these famous places. And there's a story of, you know, Lestat from Interview with the Vampire?
Yeah.
Tommy,
yeah.
But the story of Lestat comes from New Orleans in this house that we saw. There's a story of this guy who was like a vampire or like vampire adjacent of this man who came in and he said that he was a nephew of some French general. But the nephew of the French general that they were talking about when they traced it back was alive in France like 200 years prior.
Spooky, scary.
Yeah, really cool stuff. A lot of cool, spooky, scary stuff. But a lot of the spooky, scary stuff and the ghost stuff is actually interesting because it's all derived from like white, rich white people used to kill black people and black children and enslave them and hurt them. And then when bad things started happening to them, they said that the town was haunted. It's like,
oh, so the core of
their actions.
Yeah. So the core of the story is still based in sadness and trauma and awfulness. Okay.
Yeah. I just said that right now, and I have to say that I've got two reviews recently on my Apple podcast that said that I don't like white people. They're like, she obviously has issues with white women. I was like, okay, what about it?
Did they say that I have issues with white people?
No, because I think – no, you're the champion of the white man.
Yeah, a literal white knight.
Anyway. Mm-hmm. What happened in the last few days that I was gone? I haven't kept up on anything.
In New Jersey?
In the world. Anything.
In the world. Well, OJ died.
Yeah, the juice.
The juice.
He posted a video like 2 months ago being like, hospice? I'm not on hospice. I'm doing great.
It turns out we can't trust OJ Simpson. It turns out OJ may not always be telling the truth.
He's not the most reliable narrator of situations. No.
What do you remember? Do you remember OJ? Do you remember the verdict?
I would love to talk about this.
Absolutely.
Okay. So first of all, when we came to the United States, when we visited, I will never forget that we were visiting in 93 and 94. We would go to people's houses and they'd just fucking put on CNN and they just watch this trial. And I was like,
yeah,
so boring. Like, why can't we just watch regular TV? But all the adults would sit around and they would watch these proceedings and I did not understand it and I didn't care for it. But then we moved in 1995.
Yeah.
We were in Pennsylvania. And I knew that the verdict was coming. And I remember we had quads. Our classrooms were four rooms across the hall from each other, right? In our middle school. Yeah. So you had like a math class, an English class, like your homeroom classes. And I remember being in my math class and they wheeled in the TV.
Oh.
They wheeled in the TV and we watched the verdict together. I'm sure you did too, because we were both in the same middle school.
We were in the same middle school. I did not get the TV experience. We got it on the radio in reading class.
Radio?
Radio. Somebody went, queekie, queekie.
But they wheeled in the TV and everybody was like, oh, what do you want it to be? What do you want it to be? And I was like, this is like, I had no idea. I just followed the crowd. All the white kids said he should be guilty. And I said, okay. And then me too. And then I saw the reaction of the teachers and the white kids in class, which is like all of them. Hold on.
These are all the kids.
What was your situation with the radios? Did they have to use antennas to like move it around?
I'm sure. Well, I think it was already preset. But we were talking about it beforehand. And again, we had no idea what the details of the case were. But same memory, when we came in 94, it was like the biggest deal. You'd just see the whatever was going on. And I had no idea what was going to happen. But I do remember there being, even back then, there being like a racial component to it, right? Yeah. So before the verdict was announced and we were talking about it in the class, one of the kids said that my dad told me that he's going to get off, but then somebody is going to kill him because he definitely murdered her, right? Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, oh, well, that sounds like something that could happen. And then it was read and I remember like the big reaction. Everybody, I don't know if people were celebrating or what, but everyone was had just a big reaction when they heard not guilty, right? And then I remember, you know, obviously the next 30 years of OJ. And it's, OJ is one of those topics where as I've gone back and I've read more about it and heard more about it, I think it's one of those topics where you can get, you can understand the situation more, the like the more you, you know, you peel the layers, right? It's a complicated thing because like, you know, there's OJ the person. And I think for most of us with OJ the person, I think it's, for me at least, I think it's pretty obvious, I would say, that he more than likely did it. And even before...
He has to it in a book that he wrote that he
exactly.
said...
He did it, right? And then even before that, obviously, with the abuse and all, you know, like the whole story or whatever, OJ is not a good guy, right? I think that's more than enough for anybody to say, well, that's a piece of shit human being.
Yeah.
And I want no part of it. Right. I think OJ, the topic obviously is a different story.
Yeah.
OJ, the topic is about, so it's like, well, if you're going to judge somebody the way that we are told to judge people in this country, he went through the legal system. The legal system said that he was innocent. So mm-hmm. legally speaking, he is an innocent mm-hmm. man. You have no right to say mm-hmm. that he killed somebody else, right? And then you say, well, why did he get off? Now, a lot of people think that he got off because of the racial component, right? That's at least a story that they want to tell you. But the more that you read about it, it's obviously not the racial component. And it's the fact that he was a rich man. His defense had things like racial aspects in it, but he was only able to afford that defense because he was a rich man.
Yeah,
that's what it comes down to. Mm-hmm. Right? So it's interesting. It's I don't know how to react. Like, it's OJ died. He was just, I think for most of us, he's just a pop culture figure at this point. He's just one of those people. And it's like, well, you know, people that are like, well, he's a murderer and he probably is. But at the same time, Casey Anthony has a new show on Peacock. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. there are a lot of terrible people that are still out there. You know.
Yeah, exactly. All of our presidents are murderers.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's like, what are we doing here at this point? Does murder even matter anymore? It's so funny because, like, it's not funny. It's just interesting that, like, in the past, whenever I've spoken to, like, any coworkers about, like, race, like, white coworkers who are, like, conservative. Like, I remember when Black Lives Matter was still considered, like, a very taboo thing to say. I remember one of my coworkers was like, well, let me ask you this. Do you think OJ killed his wife? And I was like, yeah. They're like, so how can you say that the criminal justice system, you know, treats Black people unfairly? And I was like, because of the statistics and the data around it? Like, yeah. I don't understand. Like, it's one of those things, like, OJ, I didn't realize this until much later in life, that OJ being found not guilty was this, like, you know, smoking gun to conservatives of, like, obviously, you know, the United States does not have a the United States actually favors Black people more than mm-hmm. white people because of O.J. Simpson. And it's like, That is an insane statement. That is a crazy thing to say. But I know so many adults that are like in their 50s and 60s who like truly believe that. Probably even my age that believe that.
Yeah, no. I think what it comes down to is how much you yourself want to look into a particular situation.
Right? Yeah.
Like, if you are a person that is already kind of leaning towards some sort of let's say Republican point of views, right? You look at the OJ case, you look at the evidence, and then you look at the jury, you look at the reaction, and you say, well, clearly it's just because he got off because he's black and all of these jurors just wanted to get him off or whatever, right? And if that's all you want out of this story, then you can just live with just believing that for the rest of your life, right? But again, if you are a person that actually wants to look deeper into stuff, then you say, why? Like, why did OJ get off? Well, he got off because, again, he had the money. He had a whole defense team.
Yeah.
He also got off because the LAPD fucked up.
Yeah.
The LAPD mishandled evidence. And then you say, well, but there is obviously a racial component to it. Why is there a racial component to it? It's because the LAPD has been a racist organization for the last 70 years before OJ happened, right? And all of those things, even with all of those factors, the only reason why he still got off was because he had money.
Yep, exactly.
And that's what it comes down to. And if you don't want to recognize that, then you just don't want to recognize that. You just want to, you know, make a statement about black people.
Did you watch the Ryan Murphy show? The OJ?
I did.
You did?
I did, yeah.
I didn't want to watch it, but I did get to watch a supercut of David Schwimmer saying juice over and over again. And that was really fun.
David Schwimmer as Robert Kardashian.
Hilarious.
That miniseries was very entertaining. It was a lot of fun because it reminded me of, you know, just 90s pop culture is always exciting to me. Especially like Hard Copy and all that shit. It's just nostalgic, right?
Yeah.
So that was fun. But really, the thing to watch is OJ Made in America, which is the documentary. I think it's like a 30 for 30 documentary. It's like six parts or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that really goes into everything. It goes into the LAPD. It goes into, like, you know, the Watts riots and the Rodney King riots and how all this story came about. And then you just, you know, at the end of the day, you were still just left with however you want to think about it. The way that I think about it as well, OJ Simpson most likely killed two people and he got off. And that's not justice.
Yeah.
But I also know how it happened. I have also seen a lot of other examples of injustice in the country. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And just because, you know, this one thing didn't work out doesn't mean it doesn't wash away anything else. Right.
That's exactly. Just one person, I think what it proves is that our criminal justice system is fucked.
And this is just the one time that it worked out in the favor of a very rich black person.
Yeah, exactly. So. Yeah. Do you think that his brain should be studied for science?
Well, OJ most likely has CTE.
Yeah.
He probably does, but that's just, you know, all football players in the 60s and 70s and the 80s.
Rough stuff.
90s. Yeah, he definitely. And I, you know, you never know, but I think that may have possibly contributed to how things happened the way that they did, because I think he snapped or whatever. But definitely.
I have a question. Did Eli Manning's and Peyton Manning's dad, was he a football player?
Archie Manning, yeah.
Archie Manning. And he unalived himself, right?
No.
What? Did he? Didn't he?
No.
I watched a documentary once about their dad, somebody dying in their family of suicide. Maybe it was their grandpa. I don't know.
I don't know.
I thought it was related to that because I was thinking about how he was also a football player. Never mind. Just ignore that. Pretend I didn't say it.
Yeah, there have been obviously a lot of football players that did that.
Was it Aaron Hernandez?
Aaron Hernandez, but Aaron Hernandez had a whole bunch of other things going on. He also murdered some people.
Yeah.
The saddest one that I remember is this guy named Dave Duerson. He was a football player on the 85 Bears, right? Uh-huh. And the 85 Bears were known to be like hard hitting. They just used to take people's heads off or whatever. And for a long time, Dave Duerson was one of those people that said that CTE is not real because he's like a tough guy. And he was like, all these pussies are coming into the NFL and I don't like this and we have to be a man, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And before he unalived himself, But instead of shooting himself in the head, he shot himself in the heart.
Oh.
Because he wanted to save his brain for CTE studies. Oh. And I just thought that's like a poetically sad thing.
That is
somebody
so
shoots
sad.
Himself. So sad. And he, you know, he died like poor and destitute, which is what ends up happening to a lot of these athletes. Oh, or it used to happen.
This is so depressing.
It's a very depressing episode.
Anyway, we're on the brink of World War III. What else is there to talk about? What was the other thing I wanted to ask you about? Oh, you know, the running theme of this podcast is women's basketball. Mm-hmm. Now, I hear that Caitlin Clark was, drafted by Indiana.
Yeah, Indiana Fever.
Yeah, and people are very surprised to see what her starting salary is as a rookie.
What is it?
$70,000 or $76,000.
Yeah.
Now, what is the starting salary for a rookie, like a well-known college basketball rookie in the regular NBA?
So I think the way that it works is there is a minimum that is assigned now for every player in the NBA. And it goes by when you get drafted.
Uh-huh.
So I think top five players make a certain amount. I think the top five rookies per year, I think the guaranteed amount is between $5 or $6 million a year.
$76,000?
Mm-hmm.
That is an entry-level tech job in mm-hmm. New York City. Like, yep. That is crazy to me.
It is. I'll say this, and this is the issue that people
are you
have
about to with women. Defend wage caps? I just want to be clear on where this is headed.
Well, that's unfortunately that is the argument against it, right? It's like, well, you have to, the money has to be coming in from somewhere for you to be able to pay the players, right? Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know what internal accounting looks like for the WNBA. I don't know what. I haven't seen their books. In general, the attendance is lower than the NBA. The ratings are lower than the NBA. So, you know, they don't make as much money from endorsements. They don't make as much money from the media and stuff like that, right? Where I think there is a gap, more so than the pay gap, is attention gap in terms of how much attention these sports get, right? And somebody like, I think we've been talking about this for over a year now. Somebody like Caitlin Clark is important because now it brings eyes. And the more eyes that it brings, you know, the more, like, you hear more about stories, you hear more about players, you get people invested, you get, and that's how you build a fan base. But there was an interesting thing. You know, JJ Redick and LeBron James have a podcast together now. And JJ Redick was pointing out that, you know, the WNBA is basically 40 years younger. 40 or 50 years younger than the NBA, right?
Yeah.
And if you look at the milestones for the NBA, it's following the same track. Like in mm-hmm. the 70s and 80s, the NBA was on tape delay because there wasn't enough appeal for it that they would show the games live, right? Yeah. That's where the WNBA probably was 5 years ago. And eventually, it's going to build a fandom, and that's what we're seeing now. Like, yes, Caitlin Clark herself is a special player and it's exciting for people to watch her, but that doesn't mean that she is the lone person that is bringing this attention, right? She just happens to be the superstar of the time.
Yeah.
If she wasn't there, there most likely would have been another superstar that would have, you know, that would have gotten attention. It just helps the fact that she is, you know, a pretty white lady. And she scores in like a dramatic way. Like she makes the games exciting. So you just get like a perfect person.
Here's my other question. Why do you think that it's fair that she, like, she was on SNL.
Mm-hmm.
She's like on a lot of magazine covers. There's a lot of coverage about Caitlin Clark, despite the fact that she didn't win mm-hmm. the championship. I don't believe that I've seen anything about any of the South Carolina players really in the way that Caitlin Clark is celebrated in the media. Do you think that, like, that's fair?
Do I think that's fair in terms of a sports fan? I don't, because I, you know, sports should be a meritocracy always.
Yeah.
And if you win, then you should get attention, right? But it's fair in the sense that, you know, anytime you see any celebrities on the cover, like, has Kim Kardashian ever done anything to deserve a cover?
No.
No, right? Now, I don't want to just compare Caitlyn Clark to Kim Kardashian, but difference there. Yeah. Obviously, Caitlyn Clark is an amazing athlete, and I feel like she should get every, you know, she should get as much exposure as possible, because obviously people are, she's bringing people to the games, and that's good. All it means is that if exposure is available, there are other people that should be exposed.
Exactly. Well. Exactly. Right? If there has been this much exposure available, then why are we not extending it to all of the other incredible female athletes, especially Black athletes?
I'll say this again. I bring this name up every single time we talk about
Is it Maya Moore?
It is Maya Moore. Like, I don't, it makes me so angry that people don't know who Maya Moore is. It's like, forget the sports part of it. Forget the basketball part of it. I don't understand why a celebrity, because she was a celebrity who did the stuff that she did, didn't become a bigger deal. It does. It makes absolutely no sense. So if you're not doing anything today, watch the 30 for 30 on Maya Moore. It will open your mind. Great person.
Yeah, great. Do you have any other topics to discuss?
You want a Shohei update?
Oh, I saw. Actually, I got tagged multiple times on many tweets saying, looking for a Shohei update, please. Because of the latest news. Why don't you tell everybody what's going on there?
So remember, we were like, we don't buy it. I was a little bit like, hey, I don't know about this.
You don't buy is that you didn't buy that the translator was actually doing shifty business.
I didn't think that Shohei could be missing $4.5 million in his bank account and him not know it. And also just how are all these bets being made, right? And it turns out I was correct, because Shohei Ohtani was not missing $4.5 million. He was missing $16 million.
16?
16. This interpreter has stolen $16 million just from Shohei. And it's wild. Like, they had like a report out, and it's 100% Shohei had nothing to do with it. Oh. And it's crazy that that is a true thing, but it is true. Like, the way that it happened is when Shohei moved to America, this guy was his right-hand person. He's his translator. And so when they set up his bank account and everything like that, it all went through Ipe, right? So Ipe had it all connected, blah, blah, blah. Ipe, all the payroll just came into an account that it was under Shohei's name, but Ipe controlled everything. I think Shohei basically just, you make that much money, it's like, you know, you're not really signing for anything. You're not buying any. You just need a credit card. So you just go out and spend, right? But Ipe had access to all of this stuff.
Yeah.
And in 2021, he started gambling. You know how much he ended up gambling for? You know how much money he lost gambling?
Oh my God, how much?
He lost $180 million gambling. And he won $140 million gambling. So that nets out to $40 million he lost. All in all.
That's so many millions. What is money?
He made 19,000 bets. 19,000 bets in like 2.5 years. That's a lot of bets. That's crazy.
I don't know how bets work, but you know what's funny? I was thinking about the fact that the day that we were shitting on like online gambling and how it's messed up and it's like ruining America and it's a problem. We were also like, we should make a housewives fantasy league that people can
gamble on. They should. I mean,
let me tell you, things have been crazy. There's been some personnel changes.
Oh.
Yeah. Because Bravo in the last 2 days got rid of 1, 2, 3 housewives, four housewives were asked not to return. One of the housewives has been filed for divorce against.
Oh.
Yeah. And another one's going on maternity leave.
Let me ask you a question. As an avid Bravo watcher, supporter, do any of these changes matter until they don't change out Andy Cohen? Isn't that the big thing that needs to happen?
Girl, you said it. Because, yes. Like, obviously, here's the thing. All of these personnel changes, they sting because Andy Cohen is still there. You know what I mean? Like, if we are – like, let's talk about celebrating people who do the least. This man shows up at reunions and he has clearly not even watched the show. Like, it's crazy. And here he is making millions and millions of dollars. I don't want to be like, oh, Bethany has a point.
This is, Andy, this is what you've driven us to. Agreeing with Bethany.
Yeah. Anyway. So, a lot of layoffs happening these days, huh? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've worked like 2 days this month because like between Ramadan and traveling and all that stuff. And apparently they're going to do layoffs at work at the end of this month. And I'm like, ooh, does not look good for me. I'm a little bit worried. So anyway, maybe I should reopen the Patreon so you guys could give me money.
Yeah, I've been interviewing now for like the last 3 months. Uh-huh. And it was just because I wanted to start the process early. And thank God I did.
Yeah.
Because everything takes really, really long.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, but, you know, people are hiring. You should be fine. Yeah. Nothing exactly. else. I got my only calves to.
Only calves. On. People are asking for it. That's, you know, there's basically two things that happen. Three things that happen after I release an episode with you. Number one, people ask me for photos of you. Number two, somebody tells me that I hate white women. And number three. Your arch nemesis, Jamie, makes sure that there's a comment about your running feud with her against Minnesota.
Minnesota.
Yeah.
I am rooting. Listen, I'm rooting for the Timberwolves. My boy, Anthony, you know, talk about gambling problems.
He has a big one?
Well, he doesn't have one. I have one on him. I'm wagering money on him.
Yeah, she said it seems like even though he hates on Minnesota, that a lot of his obsession is very Minnesota related. So I think it's more of like a hate love than like a hate hate.
I think it's really more of a cosmic thing than anything else. I don't want to be tied to Minnesota. There's so many better states, but I keep finding myself.
Here you are. Here disconnected. You are. Anyway, hope you had a good birthday.
I had a great birthday.
Great. You were here. I was. I just wanted to say that so you would tell everybody how you had such a good birthday because of me.
Wait, you had nothing to do with it.
I'm the one that found the restaurant.
Oh, I forgot about that. I forgot we did that. I was thinking about the actual birthday when you
came
over.
You had Eid. Yeah, yes. You had Eid on your birthday because I think God loves you. Mm-hmm. This is probably your second Eid of your life, right? That was on your birthday? Second or third?
Probably
your third. Kind of
Probably my third. No, wait, no. It goes back. So if it
doesn't would it be take 10 years to go around the. Does no. it take 10 years to go around the calendar?
No, it takes 36 years.
Oh, whoopsies. So then this is like your second one.
This is probably my second one. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was born in Ramadan.
Oh, and look at you.
No. A sinner.
A sinner. Anyway, I hope you had a great birthday. Do you feel 41?
You know, how does one feel 41?
Do your joints hurt? Do you make noise when you sit and stand?
I say yadab a lot when I wake up.
Oh my God. I found myself on vacation. Anytime we would be walking around for a long time and then we would finally go and sit down somewhere, I would sit down and every single time I'd say, oh, yallah. Yallah. I was like, oh no, what's happening?
It just, sometimes it's not even because something is hurting, but I think I'm just realizing that the end is near. I should start acknowledging the fact that, yes, God, you do exist. I'm not going to live forever.
Yes.
Let's start mending this relationship.
There is something about an exasperated, oh God, ya Allah, ya Rab, when you are about to sit down. Like, I get when, like, you know, like Southern women are like, oh, sweet baby Jesus, when they sit down. Because there is something about reminding you of the higher being when you're in your late 30s and suddenly it hurts to sit down. It's very embarrassing.